Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Why do you live here? Do you make a life in South Dakota because of family or opportunities or inertia? What about your children? Is the state a place where they can pursue the education and training they crave, where they can find meaningful work? Is it a place where they can imagine creating a life worth living? Today, we're looking at South Dakota, the next generation. We'll follow several paths during the next 2 hours, from education and internships to the infusion of arts and culture to the enticing incentives of ride-sharing, rock climbing, and concert going. First, we start with the numbers. Jared McIntaffer is an economist with Black Hills Knowledge Network. We asked him to dig into the statistics that tell us who we are and who we are becoming. We started out by talking about whether or not our best and brightest are leaving the state.
Is brain drain an issue?
Right.
I think for a state like South Dakota, it is something that policymakers need to be thinking about. But on the whole, so if we take the perspective of statewide, is brain drain a problem for South Dakota? I think no. And the numbers seem to bear that out, or at least there's some evidence that brain drain isn't an issue for South Dakota as a whole. If you're coming from the perspective of a smaller town, say Phillip or Pierre, where I grew up, I think at that level, it is more of a concern. It's something that smaller towns with the workforce development, economic development, I think it's something they need to focus on or need to be thinking about maybe a little bit more than at the statewide level, or at least from the perspective of someone in Rapid or Sioux Falls.
So we're seeing it in our lives, but overall, if we had the big picture and the numbers, we would be less concerned than maybe we are on a personal, you know, neighborhood by neighborhood or smaller community perspective. Do I understand that right?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair way of stating it. So if we want to tackle this issue of brain drain, there's a couple of places we could try and look at to get some hard numbers. The two best, I think, really are kind of the Census Bureau. They have some good numbers on migration patterns, sort of like from state to state or county to county. And then the other place is the Board of Regents. So the South Dakota Board of Regents does a really good job of collecting data on graduates. And so we can kind of look at what are retention rates, if you will. So what fraction of our graduates maybe stay in the state after graduation or leave the state. So just kind of throw a couple numbers at you. Net migration into South Dakota is positive, and it's been positive for, you know, the last several years, certainly. So we're looking at around 4,000 to 6,000 people net positive migration into the state every year. So we draw in a lot of people from Minnesota, from foreign countries, California, Iowa. Those are big ones, sort of our regional partners. A lot of South Dakotans leave every year, too. A lot in Minnesota. The second most popular is actually Arizona. So I think we've got some retirees maybe leaving the state, some snowbirds, if you say. But on net, yeah, we draw in about 1,500 people from California every year, Wyoming, Texas, places like that.
Interesting. Can we look at the numbers from, like, you know, high school students that stay in the state or that leave and come back? Like, how deep can we dig into what exactly is happening, you know, with that age group, the age group of, you know, kids going into high school and then kids coming out of, or young adults coming out of college? What do we know?
Sure. So when we look at the migration, as you might suspect, the age group, kind of 18 to 35 is this demographic that's the most likely to move under any scenario. So people moving into the state, it's heavily concentrated in the 18 to 35 demographic. And a lot of that is sort of the 20 to maybe 25, 28-year-old. That's where a lot of it's coming in. Last year, we had 5,500 people move into the state with bachelor's degrees. 3,000 people thereabouts, an estimated 3,000, moved into the state with graduate degrees. So we're attracting a lot of that highly educated talent into the state on an annual basis. And that is the majority. So even internally, we've got a lot of bachelor's, graduate degree holders moving within the state. And a lot of that is sort of a flow that takes place back and forth between Rapid City and Sioux Falls. That's driving the majority of it. Right. So every year we get maybe 4,000 to 6,000 people moving around within the state. A lot of that kind of from rural South Dakota, moving into Rapid City, Sioux Falls areas, and some back and forth as well.
So does that speak to, you know, a drain, if you will, or a hollowing out of the rural areas for urban areas? Or is it just everybody's moving all over the place within the state as jobs change and family situations change?
That's a lot of it. So on net, there's more people moving to the bigger cities, Rapid City and Sioux Falls, than there are moving back. And that's just a trend that we see. I mean, that's as old as time, right?
Mm-hmm.
People moving from the rural areas to the cities. That's a trend that's been around since for all of human history. And so that's nothing new that we're seeing. But it does present a little bit of a challenge for that sort of workforce development and economic development in smaller communities. And South Dakota has done or taken some steps to sort of combat that, to try and mitigate it. So, for example, for quite a while now, I think this started under Rounds, pardon me if I'm wrong, but we had the Build South Dakota scholarships, where the state would provide scholarships to the university system, pay for your tuition. You just have to promise to stay in the state for a few years and work in the state. And that's a powerful tool, because once people sort of put down the roots, develop the community and family here in South Dakota, they tend to stay. So that's actually a powerful program. And then Governor Dugard, just in the last year or so, has really started pushing a registered apprenticeship program. I think they're calling it Start Today South Dakota. And that is actually, I think, a more powerful tool for sort of rural communities, where you can get partnerships with businesses and in the high schools. So you're starting a little bit younger, training high schoolers in a trade, in a career path, and showing them that, you know, there are jobs and there are opportunities in their hometowns, and they don't necessarily have to move off to Rapid City or to Sioux Falls or to Denver, something like that.
How quickly are places like Sioux Falls and Rapid City growing? And, you know, are we seeing like really a significant amount of flow into those urban centers?
Yeah, that's a fair question. Sioux Falls is growing a little bit faster than Rapid City, right? Every year they're both drawing in 1,000 to 2,000 people from out of state. They're also drawing in around 4,000 to 6,000 people from other areas, the rural areas, and from each other.
Mm-hmm.
But net migration, sort of internal migration to Sioux Falls and Rapid City, it's not as positive as you might think. It's on the order of maybe 1,000 to 2,000 a year. In terms of families, we're talking maybe 300 to 400 families a year, positive migration. Between both cities combined.
So there's
people moving to Sioux Falls from Rapid, from Lemon, from Pier, from Brookings, all over the state. And there's people from Sioux Falls actually moving out. If we want to look at it, sort of one interesting statistic was that around 7,000 people move out of Sioux Falls to other states across the country every year. An estimated from the Census Bureau last in 2015, that's where that statistic comes from. And around 5,000 or so people moved into Sioux Falls from other states. So in some areas, in some dimensions, we're sending more people out than we are drawing in. And that's even from, you know, Sioux Falls or Rapid City.
All right. So that would mean that we lost 2,000 families in and out of state, but then Sioux Falls gained because people from the rest of the state moved in, right?
Yeah. I mean, it really is a fairly dynamic system,
right?
Especially within the state. People moving into the cities, moving out of the cities. It's a constant flow, and it's really, really hard to try and track that.
Right,
if you wanted the best numbers, you'd probably have to call those folks at Cambridge Analytica. they seem to know what everyone's doing at all times.
I'm going to hold off on that.
The Census Bureau does their best, but
right. I think what I'm wondering about is long-term trends of just the amount of mobility in this age range, in this 18 to 35 age range. Is that's an age-old story, too, that these people are just highly mobile?
Yeah, so one thing that we have to think about, 18 to 35, well, maybe sort of 25 to 55, that's your prime earning years. So what we see with a lot is with that age group, that's why they're moving to the cities, right? There's more amenities, there's more excitement, you know, you want to find a partner for the rest of your life. Moving to the cities provides young people with those opportunities, right? And they might meet someone there, they may get a job, they may earn some money, they may find themselves a little bit in life, and then they might move back, right?
Right.
We do see that a lot. The trend is on net, where a lot of the smaller towns are shrinking in population. It's some communities shrinking faster than others, some maybe growing a little bit, but the overall trend is towards greater populations in our metro areas and shrinking populations in the rural areas overall.
Hmm. We all have an awareness that it is an ongoing conversation or ongoing battle or challenge, depending on your perspective, that we can't really ever stop talking about, you know, encouraging people to live in our communities or designing things and creating policies that, that make people want to come here and to stay here and to thrive here. So it's just part of an ongoing conversation about who we are in any given moment.
Yeah, it's always something that we need to be thinking about. As I say, especially for a state like South Dakota, the world may be wrong, but they do call us flyover country. And so it is an effort to try and attract new businesses here, to demonstrate to our current citizens that there are opportunities, that they should stay here. I mean, I'm sort of an example of that. I left South Dakota to go to graduate school. I went to Pennsylvania for a couple of years and then came back. And the reason I came back is because there's a relatively dynamic and exciting economy here and there are opportunities. And so that's one thing that I think is exciting about the new registered apprenticeship programs that they're pushing in the state, is that they're getting to kids when they're younger, in the high school age, to really show them what kind of jobs there are, what kind of opportunities exist for them, so that they don't have to think that the only path is, well, I've got to leave town,
right,
I've got to leave my family, I've got to go off to some university and figure it all out from there. Now, even in our smaller towns, there's lots of opportunities, and there's lots of business opportunities and things that kids and young people can do to make a life for themselves. So I think it's good that we're starting to show that and we're starting to emphasize that.
What makes you want to stay? At this point, you know, you could do different things in the future. What are there things? Is it just, you know, hey, as I gradually put down these roots, it would be harder and harder to move or more and more complicated? Or are there things that you would look around in your community and say, I stay because of this. This is the place I want to live because of what? For you, just personal question.
Well, I think you've got, well, first off, I want to say there's, your question sort of had two different interpretations, right?
Right, yeah.
The one that moving is hard and it's a pain, and there's nothing more true than that. As someone who's moved too often, I can tell you, moving is never fun. But you don't want that to be why people stay.
Mm-hmm.
You want the reason people stay to be because they're excited and they see positive opportunities. And that's what drew me back. I had a good occupation, good job in Pennsylvania. I was teaching at Penn State. It was a great job. Lots of great football games, you know.
Right.
The opportunity here was more exciting. And the ability to come back here and sort of pursue what I'm doing now as an economist is, it's a lot of fun. It's something that I wake up every day and I say, oh, there's a lot of really interesting people I can work with, like you, Lori. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of interesting conversations I could have and interesting things I can do. And that's what excites me. And that's what's keeping me here.
That's Jared McIntaffer, economist with Black Hills Knowledge Network. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. Today, we're bringing you a special two-hour look at South Dakota, the next generation. After the break, where do they go when they graduate? Jackie Hendry looks at the economic engine of our college and university system. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're looking today at South Dakota, the next generation. We'll explore how young entrepreneurs are redefining business in the state in a few moments. But first, a glance at the interconnectivity of education and workforce development. About 60% of South Dakota graduates stay in the state after finishing their degrees. Partly to encourage that trend, Governor Dennis Dugard has established partnerships between universities and industries. SDPB's Jackie Hendry looks at two schools in western South Dakota, one setting the stage for a growing tech economy and the other responding to community needs.
When South Dakota School of Mines and Technology students plan for their future, they probably work with Daryl Sawyer. He's the Assistant Vice President for Student Development in the school's Career Center, and he's been guiding students on the path to job placement for 20 years. He knows where School of Mines graduates tend to end up.
As far as those that are going directly into industry, oh, it's about two-thirds maybe will take a job out of state, but a third of them will take a job here in South Dakota.
The school boasts a 98% job placement rate for its graduates, but it has one of the lowest in-state placements of any public university in the state. But Sawyer is noticing a change.
There's been a gradual increase in those staying here in South Dakota over the past few years, which is exciting.
While the majority of their grads continue to accept jobs out of state, Sawyer says there are now more science and tech opportunities for students in South Dakota. He points to relatively new companies like Poet and Raven Industries, and a handful of tech startups in Rapid City. He says local companies are becoming more proactive by contacting students through job fairs and other recruitment strategies. But there's one piece of the puzzle that Sawyer highlights above all.
I think the increased interest in internships by employers, more employers are offering them now. I think, and I just really think they're a key piece in all this.
Businesses are using internships as a talent pipeline for South Dakota's workforce. This is especially true for new companies looking to expand. Sean Anderson is a School of Mines alum who left the state for his first job, but always wanted to return to the Black Hills. He got the chance a few years ago when he accepted a job with B9 Creations on campus. It's a 3D printing and manufacturing company launched by Mines alumni 6 years ago. Anderson is now CEO, and he hopes to expand South Dakota's economy beyond the traditional focus on agriculture and tourism.
When crop prices are up and the economy is good and lots of tourists visit, everything is great and state tax revenues are up and everybody thinks, you know, life is good. When those two things don't happen, there's lots of weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Anderson says enhancing the state's tech economy can be a stabilizer. But from the start, he saw the opportunity for collaboration with area students.
When I first joined, I was the fourth employee. Three of the four were essentially engineers and one manufacturing employee. To grow the business, it was pretty obvious to me we needed some sales marketing help.
He contacted Black Hills State University and soon hired the company's first intern.
Her very first day here, she said, well, what are you going to work on? I said, well, I'm trying to work on a press release. She says, oh, well, I'm taking a class on that. I said, perfect, you're going to write one today.
Now the company employs interns from both Black Hills State and School of Mines, and several have become full-time employees. Anderson says internships offer businesses a mutually beneficial relationship.
It goes back to creating good opportunities for people to stay here in South Dakota and have a rewarding career, you know, have opportunities to grow and do what they do best. And if we can leverage their talents and their abilities and their motivation, then it's a win-win.
A South Dakota-based telecommunications company is using a similar strategy. Innovative Systems has its main office in Mitchell, but a satellite office on the School of Mines campus exists to take advantage of the talent pool. David Springetti is manager of the Rapid City office. He says the company typically makes job offers to more than half their interns, and they'll hire one or two a year. That's not by accident.
We're looking for those students that we think have a reasonable chance of working in South Dakota. And so we're providing those people preferential internship opportunities.
Many Mines graduates still choose companies with more name recognition, like Google and Microsoft. And though several startups are finding success in Rapid City, the demand for positions may be greater than the current supply. It's a different picture for Rapid City's technical schools. With a job placement rate similar to School of Mines, more than 90% of Western Dakota Tech graduates accept jobs in South Dakota. Chandra Calvert is Associate Dean of Advancement at Western Dakota Tech. She's also noticed that local employers are more actively recruiting students, but that's not the whole picture.
And the other side of that is tech schools respond to regional needs. So we listen to the workforce needs right around us, and that really drives the programs that we create. So it's a much more direct connection than probably some of the broader four-year fields.
That means Western Dakota Tech students might be more likely to find a job in their field without looking beyond state or even city limits. Other incentives may also keep tech school grads local, like steadily rising salaries and programs like the Build Dakota Scholarship. The program offers to cover the costs of eligible tech school degrees under the condition that the students work in South Dakota for 3 years after graduation. Chandra Calvert says the true impact of the relatively new program isn't yet clear.
You know, whether that the scholarship is a good fit for people who plan to stay, or if it's encouraging people who are maybe going to leave to stay, I'm not sure. But I think by and large, we see students who are happy to take on that commitment because for the most part, they want to stay and work here.
That 3-year work requirement is part of what encouraged Tanner Blank to transfer from School of Mines to Western Dakota Tech. Blank was born and raised in Rapid City. He's graduating this semester from the electrical trades program with a job in hand and is happy to be staying near family and friends.
Because of Build Dakota, the other jobs kind of came to me, and that was super nice because, you know, I kind of want to come full circle. I've been raised by the community, and I'd like to give back to it someday, so they gave me the opportunity to do so.
But Blank understands that not everyone wants to stay in their hometown, and it all comes down to opportunity. CEO of B9 Creations, Sean Anderson, says tech and trade schools play an important role in the conversations about workforce development, but he's wary of tunnel vision, even when it comes to developing South Dakota's technology economy.
I don't care if you're in the business of selling toothbrushes or 3D printers, you only need so many engineers. You only need so many manufacturing people. You got to be able to sell it. You got to be able to grow your team. You got to be able to train and develop your people. You got to be able to manage the financial part of the company.
Anderson says many people count themselves out when they hear about openings at a tech-based company because they don't have a science degree. But he says any successful business needs people from all backgrounds.
Those are the things I don't typically hear talked about when I hear workforce. And I would love to hear our legislature, our next governor, focused on some of those things that can help enable the growth of companies that are already here.
In the meantime, his company and others will continue to work with South Dakota students as both employers and graduates take their next steps towards a future they hope is bright. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Jackie Hendry.
South Dakota is often ranked as one of the best states to start a business because of its low tax burden and regulations. But is this enough to keep young entrepreneurs from heading to bigger cities? SDPB's Jacqueline Severin spoke with two business owners to get their thoughts on fostering entrepreneurship in the state.
Andy Jorgensen and David Anderson are very different people. One lives in Sioux Falls and the other in the small community of Wilmot in northeastern South Dakota. One sells fireworks and the other repairs and restores vehicles. One went to tech school and the other got a traditional 4-year degree. However, they both had an ambition at a young age to start their own businesses. As you will hear throughout this story, they also have many of the same views on how to support young entrepreneurs in South Dakota. First, I'll introduce you to Andy Jorgensen. He owns Fire Bros, a fireworks company based in Sioux Falls. Fire Bros isn't just another fireworks stand on the side of the road. Customers can go to the Fire Bros website and view video of their fireworks in action before they buy.
A lot of stores have these screens where you get to watch the firework. And those are phenomenal because the customer sits there and knows exactly what it does. And they're very confident in seeing the video. And they go, I want that. I want to see that live. And so my thought process is if you can give them that experience on their couch from the comfort of their home, they would prefer that.
After customers buy online, they pick up their fireworks at one of two Fire Bros locations, but Jorgensen is working on a delivery option. This is no easy task due to the many regulations on the fireworks industry, but in true entrepreneurial fashion, Jorgensen is ready to take on that challenge. However, Jorgensen doesn't call himself an entrepreneur. Rather, he says he is an opportunist.
I just jump on opportunity. I'm really just a prospector in a gold mine right now. And I hope it's a gold mine. I think, you know, I see that there's a bunch of people walking this direction with shovels, and I'm the guy sitting there going, okay, how can we make this big?
Jorgensen didn't always know what he wanted to do after he got out of college, but he had the opportunity to work with a few startups in Sioux Falls, which gave him the knowledge, skills, and inspiration to start his own company. David Anderson, on the other hand, always knew what he wanted to do for his career.
I guess since the fourth grade, I think I'd made up my mind in the fourth grade that I was going to have my own business, and I wanted to do with cars. I wanted to fix up old cars. I really liked old cars. And so since the fourth grade, this is what I'm going to do. And I just did it.
Anderson now owns Route 15 Body Works, which provides a number of automotive services, including auto body repair, maintenance, and restorations. Although Anderson had an ambition to start his own business in his hometown, his biggest obstacle was overcoming the skeptics.
The thing I always heard was that, okay, so you got to go to college, get a good job, and move away. And that's what success is, you know. That's what they kind of preached to you at school and a lot of the parents. And I always thought that was wrong, and I disagreed with them. Because in the same breath, the teacher would be like, well, then our school is shrinking, the town's going to die, but you just got done telling us for 12 years we got to leave.
Anderson says he's proof that you don't have to move away to a big city to become successful. He says small communities need to start encouraging younger people to take this path.
What's going to grow a small town is entrepreneurs, and that's period, because an entrepreneur is going to come and create a business and hire people.
Anderson says starting a business in a small town is advantageous because the startup costs are low. He says small towns need to start realizing they can be an asset to entrepreneurs and stop pushing their young people to move away. Back in Sioux Falls, Andy Jorgensen says the business atmosphere is very welcoming and supportive. He says there are plenty of mentors and people that are willing to help young entrepreneurs.
We go to these big conferences and they charge you $30,000 to go be a part of their mastermind groups. Now, if you've got a $1 million business and you can make $5 million because of that, it's a totally good investment. Around here, I've got people that are retired Walmart executives. I've got people that are, you know, they've been working for payment processing companies and they retire and they're like, we want to help, right? We just want to help. And there's this like, we'll pay it forward. We want to see young people flourish. And it's like, okay, well, what do you want in return? I want to help. That's what I want in return.
However, he does think that Sioux Falls could do better in a few areas. And one of those is to encourage more risk-taking.
The industries of Sioux Falls are healthcare, insurance, and banking. So if you think about that, their job is actually to come in, work a spreadsheet, and say, here is the way that you can consistently, safely make money and minimize your risk. And that's how they make their money, is to minimize risk. So when you talk about the business culture in Sioux Falls, the business culture is supported by organizations that minimize risk. However, we have this entrepreneurship conversation where it's all about making risk and taking risk.
Jorgensen says that failure needs to be more accepted and even encouraged, because that is how people learn and become successful.
And if you talk to half the good leaders in history, they like tried a bajillion things and then finally one worked.
Both Jorgensen and Anderson say that being young and starting a business has given them an edge. They say parents, teachers, and community leaders need to start encouraging even younger people to start their own businesses. Jorgensen says ideally before they even go to college.
I might ruffle some feathers saying this, but by the time they hit college, they are kind of already part of the system. And I'm not tin hat wearing like, oh, the system of it's evil. I'm just saying like they already need steady income and they're already licking their chops at a 401k.
Jorgensen and Anderson say apprenticeships are the future of education. Anderson says the traditional college path is just too slow.
Secondary education, I suppose there's a place for it, but it has proven to be an inefficient way to transfer information and knowledge. You know, a lot of people go 4 years and they get out in five and they have a lot of debt. And what they've learned is already outdated because the industry moves so quick, or, you know, technology moves so fast. Everything learned is outdated, so now they can't find a job because they haven't worked because they don't have a background.
Anderson says he seeks out young people to train for his business and that most of his employees have learned on the job. Jorgensen wants to start an apprenticeship of his own so he can share his knowledge and skills and help other young people start businesses. Both Anderson and Jorgensen say the path of success is going to look much different for future generations, and families, communities, and teachers need to support that. They say to keep young entrepreneurs in South Dakota, communities need to be welcoming, supportive places that foster the entrepreneurial spirit rather than hindering it. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Jacqueline Severin in Sioux Falls.
You can find these stories and more on our website. We've got a special website set up for you, sdpb.org/next generation. Find digital content and more there. Now, up next, after a quick break, what makes you want to live here? We look at how everything from ride sharing to rock climbing to Shakespeare in the Park help mold who we are becoming. You're listening to South Dakota, the Next Generation, on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're looking at a new generation of South Dakotans today on the program. We end this hour with insight into East River and West River plans to entice more young people to create a life worth living here in the state. We'll hear about the future of the Black Hills in a moment.
But first, the city of Sioux Falls has a new mayor. During Paul Ten Haken's campaign, he talked about creating the kind of place where your kids grow up and never want to leave. And if they do leave, what can we do to bring them back home? I asked Ten Haken about that goal when he stopped by the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls.
A lot of pieces to that pie, and one of the pieces starts with making sure we have the jobs here that pay well and that people want to either move here for or stay here for. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking $10, $11, $12 an hour jobs. I'm talking good biotech jobs, white collar jobs, good electrical plumbing jobs, good trade jobs, making sure we have the education with Southeast and some of our other higher ed facilities to make sure we're equipping our grads with the skill set that employers want. Because if the employers know that the workforce is here, they'll bring the jobs here. But right now, they don't know if we can have the workforce that they need. So it keeps some businesses away. So that's one. And what can Sioux Falls do? Sioux Falls as a city can create the amenities, the quality of life, the culture, the safety, the decreasing crime rate that says, okay, Avera has 700 open jobs right now, so they're doing their job. The city now is doing their job in selling them on the city. So I just talked to a friend recently. She's moving from Sioux Falls. Very sharp lady, very smart. I'm bummed we're losing her. She's moving to Oklahoma City to take a VP of marketing position there. And she said, Paul, they sold me as much, if not more, on Oklahoma City than they did on this job. I mean, the job was part of it, but man, they really sold me on Oklahoma City. And that's what the city can control. Because I want people to say, listen, Sioux Falls wasn't on my radar, but man, you really sold me on Sioux Falls and the quality of life and what it's like to live here.
What are young people looking for in a city? What do they define quality of life as?
Yeah, they're looking for realistic workforce housing options, sure. Housing that's, I hate to say affordable housing, but housing that fits their budget. You know, when someone's 23, 24, 25 coming out of school, they're not living in $300,000 houses. So what housing options do we have for people that are just getting started in their career? What sort of culture, arts, entertainment options do we have? What sort of downtown and nightlife do we have in our downtown? If I'm recruiting someone to Sioux Falls for a job, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take them downtown. And I'm going to drive them around downtown. So making sure we have a downtown that's clean, presentable, shows it's progressive. We're investing in new things like the River Greenway and the Rail Yard Project. And then some amenities like ride sharing and things like that, that it took us a while to get that. But those are small amenities that to the next generation of workforce, they look at those things to judge the hipness and progressiveness of the city that they want to maybe put down roots in. So I think it's the city's role to look at how are we bringing together all these pieces to make the city as attractive as possible to recruiting workforce.
Does walkability matter? Is that something that was important and then passed, or is it growing?
Walkability absolutely matters. Mm-hmm. And we have a ways to go in that. I mean, Sioux Falls is not a walkable city. Mm-hmm. It's not a very bikeable city. We have a great bike trail.
Right.
You know, with 30 miles of uninterrupted surface, we don't have to stop one time, and it's great. But you get off the bike trail, and this is not a bike-friendly city, and in some cases, it's not a real walking-friendly city. So I think we have a lot of ways to go with that, and you improve that over time. You improve it with the way you're treating crosswalks or the way you're treating intersections, with the way you're doing curb cuts, with the way you're doing traffic flow and traffic patterns and all these things that make the city feel more, walking friendly to its citizens. Mm.
What about micro-targeting? You mentioned that in one of your plans, to sort of, to recruit and retain, work on that really micro-targeting perspective, workforce pockets more effectively is what mm-hmm. you said. What does that mean?
Yeah.
We're in the digital world.
What it means is, I would have... I would like to see us use marketing tools and marketing strategies where it says, okay, Lori Walsh was in Sioux Falls, but she moved away 7 years ago. She now lives in Tallahassee, but she still has a mother in Sioux Falls, and so she still has a connection here. And we should be targeting the heck out of you with digital ads and other things to convince you to move back here. It's just enough to tickle you to see it enough times to promote the quality of life or promote the things that are important to you. Oh, and by the way, we also know that she likes bicycling, she likes swimming, and she likes Chick-fil-A. As soon as the Chick-fil-A comes to Sioux Falls, we're going to target Lori with a now open in Sioux Falls. I mean, small, silly things.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's micro-targeting to the people based on all the data points you have about them to make sure they Sioux Falls stays on their radar as a city that they need to come back to.
That's Paul Tenhanken, mayor-elect of Sioux Falls. Let's jump the river now and head to the Black Hills. 45 years ago, Black Hills community leaders commissioned a study to research why people choose to live in the region and what it would take for more people to come, stay, live, and grow in the Black Hills of the future. Now, that study didn't specifically focus on younger demographics, but during a recent episode of Where Do We Go From Here at the SDPB Black Hills Studios in Rapid City, the panel discussed how community interaction and quality of life are important incentives for young professionals to stay and have a career in Western South Dakota. Larry Rohr has the summary.
During the recent program, it didn't take long for panelists Katie LeClaire, Jody Severson, and Kay Jorgensen to focus on the importance of a community that offers a lifestyle and career opportunities for young professionals to thrive and grow. LeClaire has been active in a number of civic projects in Rapid City, and she feels that the region has evolved for young people, both in career potential and community involvement.
There was a time when the sense was that if you lived here and if you were in your 20s, it was because you couldn't make it in Denver or Minneapolis or a larger community. And I live here because I want to, not because I couldn't make it in a bigger town, because I could. And I think a lot of the reasons that I'm happy living here are because of investments that in leadership of previous generations. And I see the community growing, and what I hear from my peers about why they choose to live here and why they want to be here is that you can become involved. A lot of folks my age who are raising families have a reason to care because we look at our children and we want to be a part of making the community stronger. And if you live here and you want to join a board and you're willing to do the work, you can probably get on a board. And that's not true in a lot of larger towns.
And if making a place at the table for younger generations is needed, LeClaire says it's important to recognize that many younger people work and socialize in non-traditional places. Therefore, groups and organizations that want their input and involvement may need to seek them out.
And that might mean that they're developing their skill sets in an environment or in a sphere that's outside of some very excellent places where we typically look, but those aren't the only places where we can look. They might have blue hair, they might, you know, not have an executive position, but they have a voice to bring, and they may not have money to bring to the table, but they have ideas and support and energy, and they can help build the excitement in the community. And by combining those two brains together of somebody who maybe has money and more experience, somebody who has less experience but a lot of passion and a lot of practical steps of how to get there and involve more people, what could they do together? And I would love to see a lot more of that. And a lot of those people may not be somebody who will come and ask to join your board. So what we need to do instead of asking why aren't you coming to us is go to them.
In the case of the Black Hills area, the School of Mines is often cited as an example where young technology talent is trained but may not have the chance for a postgraduate career nearby. Jody Severson, a political and marketing consultant in Rapid City, says the issue is more complex than just job prospects when you ask this important question.
What would it take to make you want to live here? I think that we may take too much stock in living around here, although we do have some magnificent natural assets. As you travel around the country, you find that in a certain way, we are not that unique. It is very competitive out there, and there are a lot of communities who can offer something that is very much alike what we have to offer here. And I think a good smart strategy needs to understand that it's not like it's just an automatic that if we say we want X or Y or Z to happen here, we want to be able to attract and hold young families, for example, that they would just naturally see those advantages because, in fact, the competition around the country is tough when you're talking about the very kinds of people coming out of tech, for example, that we're talking about.
With strong competition, Severson says job opportunities, lifestyle, and the chance for making a difference in the community are important, but he and longtime Spearfish businesswoman and former legislator Kay Jorgensen both emphasize the importance of creating an environment for raising a family.
If you had to pick out just one thing, it's very simple. You absolutely have to have schools that somebody who can make $200,000 a year wants to put their kids in.
It's as simple as that. We are doing that. I think we beat ourselves over the head a little too much, but if we're looking to what the question might be, it seems to me that part of what we ought to be asking is what are the public policy statements that need to be made in order to drive quality of, and in this case, let's just focus on education. If the public policy is to finance quality public education, then it isn't should we tax, but how much and how is it distributed?
As public policy drives important decisions like supporting a quality education system, Katie LeClaire says those directly connected to policy outcomes need to be in the room as that policy is formulated, and the community needs to be open to new ideas.
I believe in Rapid City and the people here, and that if we got out of our own way, we could figure it out. And that we have more here. We keep looking outside, and yes, let's figure out what other communities are doing and modify it, you know, not reinvent the wheel and modify it, but let's also give more credit to our assets that we have here, and let's come together in a room and beg to disagree with each other. We reach consensus too quickly. Let's go through iterations. Let's have people disagree with each other and refine the ideas and have a real conversation where we can be passionate and respectful, and then see what we create together. I think in that environment, with the people we have here, we could think of great solutions that nobody has even imagined right now at this moment.
And she adds that being inclusive and inviting new voices into the discussion may occur in an old-fashioned way.
I think that we simultaneously overestimate and underestimate the power of social media. And we need to use it deliberately and carefully. And we also need to remember that in the day of digital, the power of a handwritten note, and that everything is still personal. And so how do you get people in the room? It's still personal. You make a relationship. It's still personal. It's going to take relationships. Change travels at the speed of trust. And every change takes that type of long-term effort, and we need to be willing to do that also.
While their discussion of Rapid City in 2040 was not specifically focused on the role of younger demographics, LeClaire, Jody Severson, and Kay Jorgensen all agreed that they are vital to community growth. As important that is to expanding beyond a commodity-based economy, developing progressive public policy, and appreciating the process of community dialogue as much as the result. For In the Moment, I'm Larry Rohr.
We've got another hour of South Dakota, the Next Generation coming up. But first, as we look at what makes a dynamic workforce, a fluid, stable economy, and a thriving landscape for young adults, we also wondered whether or not business leaders and policymakers were striving to keep the creative class close to home, the artists, the actors, the musicians, the arts advocates. Randy Cohen is Vice President of Research and Policy at Americans for the Arts. I asked him where the arts and artists fit into this conversation.
It's a big conversation, and interestingly, it's one being led by the business community. These days, you know, in this global economy, you know, innovation is king, and you know, how do you innovate? Well, you create, you come up with new ideas. Workforce is the biggest thing. And in a lot of places I go, you know, everyone's worried about the brain drain. I go to so many places where I hear things like, our number one export is highly educated young people. I mean, brutal, right? And so organizations like the Conference Board, that's the national organization for big business in this country, their research shows that creativity is now among the top five applied skills that business leaders are looking for. It's leapfrogged the three R's, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic. You know, and we talk about, of course, you have to be able to read, write, and do math. But when you can add some creativity to your scientific, your engineering, you know, your medical knowledge, those are the high-paying jobs, you know, that we're all trying to look to attract and retain in our community. 72% of business leaders say creativity is of high importance. And then the business leaders were asked, okay, well, how do you know if you got a creative worker on the line, right? You know, there's no typing test for creativity. Two big indicators of creativity way at the top: starting your own business, entrepreneurial activity, and study of the arts, especially while in college. And we hear more and more from the business world in the interview. They're asking, you know, tell me about, you know, how you're involved in the arts. You know, do you attend? Do you create? Because that is a proxy measure for creativity. And here's the interesting thing. A lot of those workers, certainly very different coming up than when I got out of college. You know, right. I packed up my 64 Dodge Dart with a punch button automatic, and I went to whoever'd have me.
Right.
Workers these days are picking the communities that they want to live in, moving there. And then they'll make it work. I'll start my own business. I'll hook on with an incubator. And in interviews, domestically, internationally, it's the same answer. Look, you want me to be creative in the workplace? I'm a creative person. You know, I want arts and culture in the community. And I want arts maker spaces. I want great restaurants and a cool downtown. And that is what's attracting that 21st century workforce. If that's where the workers are, that's where the businesses go. And the conference board, they write in this conclusion of this report, you know, this is business scholars writing for business leaders. It's clear that the arts, music, drawing, drama, dance, literature, provide skills sought by employers of the third millennium. So kind of wrap all that back to the question, we need to invest in our artists. We need to invest in our arts organizations to keep them in our communities, because that's what creates that cultural vibrancy. And you get all these other benefits that go with that. Economic benefits, 21st century workforce attraction benefits, and on and on.
Randy Cohen is Vice President of Research and Policy at Americans for the Arts. He joined us at the studio at USF when he was in town for a statewide arts conference. Now tonight, Stephanie Rissler looks at academic and trade institutions of the state. What efforts are they making to encourage today's students to stay in South Dakota to earn their degrees? What does job placement look like? Who's choosing to go? Who's choosing to stay? Stephanie Rissler is joined by a panel of experts from across the state. Tune in tonight to South Dakota Focus on SDPB-TV. You can find all of today's stories and more online at sdpb.org/nextgeneration.